What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, Justifying Your Value. This week, our guests are Forrest Pekka, Chris Shattuck, and Dr. Josh Yellen, and he just discussed how he likes to sing Little Bunny Foo Foo in class.
I haven't sang that song in a while.
Well, it was Nicole who said that. It was something really funny that she remembered. So
probably.
All right. I'm your host, Jeremy Jackson. My students have already left today because, like I said, our bell schedule literally changes every week. So they're not here for class today, but it is what it is. You can join the conversation at sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. And this one is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/earnyourworth. So sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/earnyourworth. That's where all the resources, which there's a lot, will be posted. And then Chris just gave me a whole book that's on the NATA Secondary School Athletic Trainer Committee about position improvement guide. So that's a really good looking resource that I'm going to have to finish looking through. So without much further ado, we're going to get right to this right here. Josh, I'm going to start with you. I'm only going to give you 3 minutes.
That's it.
Because I know you can take 35.
I'll I'm going to give you 3 minutes.
I told your students that I would just let you talk because it's probably what you're going to do.
All right. So I am going to give you 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And I just want you to tell me what is an athletic trainer worth. And then Chris, Forrest, I'm going to go to you and give you 2 minutes. And then Chris, I know you're practical to the point, so you're going to get 1 minute. Tell me what an athletic trainer is worth, and then we'll continue from there. So, Yellen, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's a rhetorical question, right? Is that what's an athletic trainer worth in terms of monetary compensation, in terms of the value of healthcare, in terms of the value of patient satisfaction, in terms of the value of community involvement? What's the worth monetarily?
You tell me what an athletic trainer is worth.
Time's ticking. I'm already working in my 3 minutes. You know, it's a really hard question to answer, and the reason why is because we have to look at all the things that an athletic trainer does. And one of the things that I always ask people is, especially those practicing athletic trainers, and Shattuck, I'm going to put you on the spot right here. What's the definition of an athletic trainer?
Well, it's a healthcare provider that deals with the prevention, care, treatment, rehabilitation of injuries.
Pretty close. So my point in always asking that is that what's an athletic trainer worth? It goes back to our branding, right? What do we do as athletic trainers? Athletic trainer is we are healthcare providers who collaborate with physicians. We specialize in prevention, emergency care, clinical diagnosis, rehabilitation, therapeutic intervention of injury and illness. That's what we do. And when you look at that definition, it's pretty broad-based. Nowhere in there does it say we deal specifically with athletes. Nowhere in there does it say that we deal specifically with sports. Nowhere in there does it say that we can't deal with X population, geriatric, pediatric, etc. So when you look at what is an athletic trainer worth, we have to go in and look at those definitions, and then we have to kind of what we do, you know, in education, crosswalk into these different domains. So for instance, in athletic training, our first practice domain is injury prevention and wellness protection, right? That's our first domain. Second domain is clinical evaluation diagnosis. Third domain is emergency care. Then we get into treatment and rehabilitation. And then it's organization, health, and well-being. It's soon going to, and professional development, it's going to change into healthcare administration. So as we start to say, okay, well, what's an athletic trainer worth? So many people start to compare the athletic trainer, the AT, to the physical therapist. The athletic trainer to the chiropractor, the athletic trainer to the PA, the athletic trainer. I don't really think we get a whole lot of occupational therapy comparisons. But the normal comparison is, okay, well, what's the difference between an athletic trainer and a physical therapist? My rebuttal to that is, why are we so worried about one or two of those domains? The only healthcare profession that specializes in prevention of injury and combines that with immediate and emergent care is us. We're it. And in today's healthcare model, when there's so much emphasis on prevention of injury, we become incredibly valuable.
All right, that's it.
No way.
Yep, that's it.
No,
that's 3 minutes.
No, I'm going to keep
going. I told you that's 3 minutes. All right, Forrest, what is an athletic trainer worth?
Yeah, I just said we become good. Yeah, that's it.
You just define athletic training as only anything you did.
All right.
I'm going to wait till you talk, and then I'm going to do.
Yeah, we'll get you back on here, Josh. But I agree. I agree with everything you said. I think we try to position ourselves in competition with others, but I think we have to be a standalone profession as well. I mean, we have a lot of crossover with other professions, but that doesn't necessarily identify who we are. When determining our worth, I think we have to consider all of the domains of education. But, you know, but the question comes down to what are we worth? And I think the answer to that is it's a double-edged sword. What to demonstrate our worth? You know, what have we done to demonstrate our value, to prove our worth? So have we measured outcomes? Do we have patient satisfaction? Do we have studies to determine our effectiveness in eval and diagnosis and prevention and, you know, emergent care? Do we have data to demonstrate that we're successful at that? And I would unfortunately argue that we don't have a lot of data to be successful in those domains. So we can all arbitrarily look at a dollar figure and tell people what we're worth. But I think when it comes to healthcare, we also have to have outcomes and we have to have measures to be able to determine what that worth actually is. And that's by demonstrating our value. So what I'm worth, heck, I think I'm worth a lot as an athletic trainer and as an administrator, but what is my institution determined that I'm worth? What do I bring to the table that can be measurable to earth? And I think that's probably the question that, you know, hopefully we'll have here and we'll have a lot of discussion on. So what am I worth? I'm worth $1 million, but is somebody going to pay me $1 million? We have to prove that we are.
All right, good. You came in under your time. You still have 10 seconds to spare.
I think that my clock was...
Little bunny foo-foo.
I don't want to see you hopping through the forest.
All right, popping them on the Chris head.
Picking up Shattuck. The field mice.
Yeah.
Okay, I would agree that what you're worth is really what the perception of people think the value of your services are. If you're talking monetary... What's your worth? What's an athletic trainer worth at U of H? Probably a little more than, or a lot more than Marfa, Texas. Somebody out in a high school in Marfa, Texas. You have collegiate sports at U of H. You have an athletic training education program. In Marfa, you got, what, maybe 50 athletes. So what's your worth in one area or setting or location is different than somebody else. I think it's important that we put a monetary value on what we're worth. What should be our hourly rate? And if you're talking about Houston or Dallas or Austin, I don't think any athletic trainer should take a contract job less than $40 an hour. I think that's what we're worth. Is that a minute?
That was right at a minute. There you go. All right. So $40 an hour.
Wait, yeah, look at how smug he is right now. You see that?
Well, he said before we actually like started, he said he was just going to sit there and look pretty and be Shattuck Sharp while you talk.
He does. Yeah, he is. He's a pretty guy.
I have a button down shirt in my car. I almost wore it for you.
I just want to go on record, Forrest. You know, hopefully that you and Chris will meet. I'm sure you will at the NATA in Houston. And I just want to go on record saying I think today is the first day that I've ever outdressed Chris Shattuck.
I should have put that shirt on.
Yeah, you should have.
We'll take a commercial break and he can go run to the car.
Yeah.
All right. So Chris sent me the information, the breakdown, and it said in District 6 the average salary for an athletic trainer is $64,000. That's here in Texas or, you know, greater Texas area. And then in general, the number is $55,000. I was talking with Forrest just the other day, and he said the average there in Idaho is about $42,000. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, on a good day. I think collaboratively across the state, that's probably fair.
All right. So, again, $52,000 is what I got from Google. $55,000 is what the NATA got from there. Research, I think, in the 2014 salary survey, and I know they just conducted another one. So this, just to kind of compare that to some of the other things, again, head coach, again, we're not a head coach. We don't do the same things, so I don't know that it's really fair comparing us, but we do make very important decisions regarding kids.
Yeah, but here's the issue. Why are we comparing ourselves to a coach? Why are we comparing ourselves to other...
Here's why I included that there. Okay. Again, they're not medical professionals. That's why I just said we don't do the same job, but we work very close with them. And here I am paid like a coach. I have a teacher salary and a stipend.
Mm-hmm.
A coach has a teacher salary and a coaching stipend.
Right.
So that is the reason that I included that, because okay, a lot of secondary schools are paid that way.
My point in saying that is not on the secondary school or, you know, the high school based athletic trainer. My point in saying that is that there's an overall theme that occurs. And in athletic training, we have an identity issue, and we have had one for a while. That athletic training has really emerged in the medical model. Yet we're the only medical model that functions outside of an umbrella that's not medicine. So for instance, if I look at the majority of athletic training rooms, college-based, high school-based, etc., they are functioning out of the athletics department. That's the director of athletics, or you can call it the vice president of intercollegiate athletics, or whatever the new title is. That's who's evaluating our performance. And what Forrest said before was, are we able to demonstrate outcomes? Are we able to justify our value? Are we able to do all the things that, you know, if we take the medical model, if we take the business model, we combine that. Can we put that together to justify our worth, justify our value? So it's one of those things of, well, yeah. I mean, if I look at a college coach, and let's just say, I mean, we went through it at UH just last week, right? If I look at Tom Herman is now what you consider what a Power Five coach, and he's making upwards of $5 million a year. Well, okay, show me a CEO of a company that specializes in athletic training or, you know, whatever it is that's going to make upwards of $5 million a year. The issue is that there's so much perceived value on coaching, right? On, we're going to put a good team in, on the field and, people are going to go sit in the stands, all these other things. The athletic trainer has nothing to do with that. And so that athletic trainer has to be evaluated in a different model, right? The other thing I would say about that salary survey is that if you look deeper into it, the numbers are still a little bit skewed. And the reason why the numbers are skewed is because up until 2022, the entry-level requirement to go into athletic training is still a bachelor's degree. After 2022, the entry-level requirement will be a master's. And the idea is that if you look at the average salary in athletic training for somebody with their bachelor's, somebody with their master's, somebody with their doctorate, it increases based on the level of education. So the hope is that when we push the profession into the entry-level requirement is an entry-level master's, that average salary goes up.
So just there, on that 2014 survey, it's 49,000 for the bachelor's and 54,000 for the master's, and then it says 80,000 for the doctorate.
Right.
So.
Right. The other thing, too, is that, and, you know, Forrest, Chris, Jeremy, weigh in on this. As we go into an entry-level master's, we're getting master's degrees that, you know, signify that we are masters of our content in athletic training. Right now, in the current model, somebody gets a bachelor's degree in athletic training. If we look at the overall entry-level requirement, gets a bachelor's degree in athletic training. And then can go on and get a master's in pretty much anything. I mean, I've seen students at universities where I ask, well, you know, they're a graduate assistant. Oh, what are you getting your master's in? I'm getting my master's in, you know, like ecology. What? Well, that's what they funnel me into so I can be available for the athletics department. That doesn't provide any value for what you're doing, right? So there are all these other things in the works that I think people need to look at and consider. And how are we going to keep pushing the value of athletic training up? And I think it goes back to, I'm going to say what Forrest said, and I love the way that he thinks, because, you know, he always has a business slant to it, which is, how do we produce those outcomes? How do we justify the value? And how do we speak to the right people that can say, look, Chris Shattuck, I know the value of Chris. I know the value of Jeremy. I work with you guys. You know, Chris has done a great job. Jeremy's done a great job at your respective high schools of saying, look, this is what we do. This is everything we do. But the issue is that the profession, the majority of the people, they don't think that way, right? So
that's true. I would agree that you have to do it yourself. You know, our professional organizations can only do so much. You know, we're the soldiers. We're going to have to go fight. And if everybody does that, things are going to get better for them.
Well, and
I've been a fan of kind of what you have been saying, you know, where you have to go talk to people, you have to put out the media about what you're doing, press releases, that kind of stuff. I'm just not very good at doing it, being a follower, I guess, of what you're saying, until just recently, until I really want to make the ninth grade center athletic trainer happen, the middle school athletic trainer coverage happen. And so now at this point, I'm like, now I understand all of that stuff as Chris has been saying, you know, you need to do all this stuff. You need to tell people about it. After I talked to our school board member here, and he was like, I don't know about it because you haven't told me. It's your fault. And I was like, that's exactly what Chris said, is nobody else is going to fight that for you. Mm. You got to fight that yourself.
Yeah, they got 1,000 things coming at them. They don't know what we do unless you let them know.
Yeah. And so it's sad that it took me that long to process, you know, 2-3 years, whatever it is. But, you know, it's a good message for us to continue to repeat that you have to be willing to justify your value through the hot dog eating contest you have, through the chili cook-off, through the workshop where, you know, U of H is bringing all their students to help out with the GS to teach lessons, and or they're presenting at conferences, that kind of thing. Or the video that I just had produced where we're teaching CPR and a girl used that to save her mom's life. Like, yep. Literally, she's standing here talking to me because I taught her daughter a skill that's the things that I need to be sure that is passed on to the school board, to the principals, to everybody that makes a decision about my job. I need to be sure that they know that.
Forrest, I want to throw it back to you.
Yeah. All right. And
I want you to elaborate.
I agree with everything.
I want you to elaborate a little bit more about how you're using outcomes to justify the athletic trainer and the position and the leverage you've created in a hospital-based model.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to. I think, and, you know, first I'll comment on, you know, just some of the, you know, conversation that was going on that, you know, we have to, I think, how do I say, also a fundamental flaw that you are 100% right, that we have to individually go out and market ourselves and demonstrate our own skills. And I think that's, like I said, a fundamental flaw within our profession, because in the majority of other healthcare professions, nursing, physical therapy, occupational therapy, PAs, that group of our colleagues, our healthcare counterparts, our healthcare colleagues, it's already understood, you know, what that brings to the table. And again, that comes from a lot of research, a lot of back time, and a lot of work done with outcomes. So to get back to, you know, your comment, Josh, I think I can say my first job, my first justification of my salary was to demonstrate that we can see more patients in our hospital setting, in our physician-based practice setting, due to having an athletic trainer in that clinic. Now we have if we want to compare one healthcare professional to another, one clinician, you know, quote unquote physician extender, you know, however we don't use that term for a profession or to identify a profession, but we have to say that our services provided are equal to or better than another, you know, than another healthcare provider. So everybody doesn't have a job, but we had to demonstrate why athletic trainers are successful. So to go back, in our institution, we demonstrate athletic training. We demonstrate the value by our ability to see more patients, to be able to document, to be able to order entry within our electronic medical records. And by having the athletic trainer as a provider in clinic supporting the physician, we're able to see about a 20 to 25% increase in patient volumes. Now that's a direct correlation to a revenue stream that the hospital can see, and it's a true financial piece to what to bring value to the athletic trainer. We've gone to a model now where our sports medicine practice, an athletic trainer is always the first hire, because we know that volumes and the throughput, but we've also done patient satisfaction studies to demonstrate that our patients are also happier and they feel satisfied when they work with an athletic trainer. For our outreach setting, we've also have to look at measurables and why is it? I mean, historically, it's always referrals back to the system. Are you referring more patients to the institution? Are you referring more patients back to the physical therapy clinic that you work, you know, that you work under, whatever the institution is? So that's also a piece of the pie. But as you mentioned, Josh, with the, you know, ever-changing landscape of healthcare, we also have to look at what healthcare is doing and how it's changing. So we recently did a study with our outreach athletic trainers, and we measured the value of the service provided with regards to rehabilitation. So using the PM and our billable codes that every other healthcare professional uses to bill for services, we can take a look at services provided by an athletic trainer in the rehab setting and look at what that dollar figure would be if we were to bill. However, we're not billing for it. We're looking at it as a cost containment model. So one athletic trainer saved the system over $65,000 just by working part-time, doing about 2.5 hours of rehab a day with their athletes. That also brings a value to our healthcare system as they're looking in more of an accountable care model on how we save dollars rather than pay for dollars.
Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, and, you know, Chris, chime in on this, everything that Forrest just said, looking at essentially the business side of athletic training, how do we apply that to the high school-based athletic trainer?
You're talking about outcomes or patient outcomes and
right.
Justifying that. I think we could do the same thing. I mean, we still document on an EMR system, and we can pull up what we've done. And you could always apply codes to that to see what that's worth in a clinical setting. And you can take that data and you can show it to whoever you need to show it to.
Okay.
And I think looking at it, you know, Chris, you know, in each one of the things that Jeremy and I talked about earlier, when demonstrating your value, you also have to look at what are your employers or what is the institution looking at as what they determine a value as well. So in finding out what their needs are to determine value is then what we have to look at and measure. So we want to measure our outcomes and our objectives based on what their needs are. So it may be different in a high school setting versus a hospital setting versus anything else. But, you know, if we were to be able to show that we're saving $65,000 per athletic trainer in a high school setting, the value of that would go more towards the parents, right? Because they're not only is it $65,000 in billed charges on Medicare rates, which is our lowest possible payer, but it's also not paying co-pays, it's not paying deductibles, it's not time off of work where they're driving to pick up their child to take them back to, you know, formal rehabilitation. So I think there's, you know, the data that you have has to be presented to the audience in an effective manner where somebody will look at that number and say, that's a value to me.
Yeah, so you brought up something really interesting, and that was, what essentially does the customer want, right? When we're looking at value, when we're looking at outcomes, you brought something up that I never thought about. All the other times that we'd evaluate athletic training services, it's essentially through the eye of what the athletic trainer thinks is important. But really, we should be asking, you know, the supervisor. So if you're an athletic trainer still in an athletics department, what's important to the athletic director? What if you're an athletic trainer at the high school, what's important to the athletic director? What's important to the principal? What's important to the superintendent? What's important to the parents? If you're an athletic trainer in the hospital-based system, what's important to the supervising physicians, to the CEO, all those other things. And so the question I have for you is that in today's healthcare model, and I'm going to put this out to the three of you, how important is it for the practicing athletic trainer to understand the business of healthcare now? And from my end as the athletic training educator, how much more of that do we need to put in the curriculum?
So I'll go ahead and let me start with that real quick. I want to give a shout out to Alicia Pennington. She's got the AT Vantage podcast, which they are actually giving CEUs. And the focus of their podcast right now is business aspect of athletic training. So it goes right along with what you're saying. So I would definitely check out their podcast, and that'll help you understand the business of athletic training, because she is a business owner and an athletic trainer. And that's something I can't talk about because I don't know. And so I want to give a shout out to her and all the cool work she's doing there. As far as understanding all this stuff, you know, this is almost the same conversation right now that we had with Scott Galloway a couple weeks ago, you and I, and it's just about understanding at each level. And I don't understand. And so that's why I had that conversation with Scott. I listened to what Chris says. I have to process it myself my own way and then go back to it and then again struggle to do it. And I know Jesse asked, how do we get this stuff in front of the people? Because really the time we're most seen is if we're absent, if something right. happens and we're not there. Chris said the only reason they've got middle school coverage is because a superintendent said, well, why isn't my kid being covered or something like that, or something.
Right, yeah, it was a school board member that they're at a game watching their daughter cheer or something, and somebody gets hurt, you know, and there's nobody there to take care of that injury. So that next week, of course, we're scrambling to contract athletic trainers for junior high coverage. When we've been saying all along,
How much do you charge for it?
We charge $35 an hour.
So that goes back to, well, let me Forrest, tell yep. me from your end, how important is it from the athletic training education side? And I know that you and I do some work with the Katie. How important is it that from the athletic training education side that we, the ones that are designing curriculums, add more business-related classes?
It is absolutely imperative, because I think, now, as I know, it's absolutely imperative that we have some of the business. Now, I mean, part of what I've learned, I've been self-taught because it was based on how I get paid. So, I mean, I had to learn it because it wasn't what I was taught in school or my undergrad or my graduate work. It's what I was taught because I wanted to get a salary that I felt I was worth. So I had to learn what it is. But I think it's, you know, traditionally when we look at our business and administration of athletic training, we look at, you know, from educational standpoint, we look at how do we manage our athletic training room and how do we cover the costs and supplies and different things like that. So we have some type of understanding of management of funds, but we're the only allied AMA, you know, recognized allied healthcare professional that doesn't have truly a business component, you know, built into their curriculum. And I think it's incredibly imperative that we move in that direction. I mean, even the fact of understanding what the CPT codes are. I mean, it's what every other healthcare profession works off of and gets billed off of. But I would be challenge to ask a lot of athletic trainers what a 97110 is.
Hang on.
All right. I'm gonna go
91. Say it again. 97.
97110.
All right. So 97 is your PM&R code.
Right.
And so what is it? 005 is athletic training evaluation. 006 is athletic training reevaluate. Am I right so far?
So far, so yeah.
So it's 97. What? 111.
110.
That has to be. Is that manual therapy?
No, manual therapy is a 97140.
Oh, I'm close. What is it?
Is it the evaluation?
No, that's
005.
That's 005.
So he has these listed in this paper that I have linked in the show notes. So instead of us my point is that
out of everybody in this room, I'm the only athletic trainer that's not practicing. And so the question I have is that we need as a profession to understand this more. And I'm going to take ownership from the education side. And this is something that I've been critical of. I've been critical of my own profession, my own specialty, is, you know, as the program director, we represent less than 1% of the overall athletic training population. And we're the ones that are responsible for building our individual curriculum based on the clinical competencies and proficiencies, you know, educational competencies, clinical proficiencies, et cetera. And if the program director doesn't have a good understanding of this, then when we're teaching these aspects of athletic training, right, and this falls under this fifth practice domain, when that program director doesn't have a good understanding of it, that curriculum is going to be weak. And everybody that's coming out of that program is going to be weak in this area. And what we're learning about is that arguably this fifth domain, I would say, is the most important domains out of all of them. Because really athletic training is a trade-based, just like any other medical profession, right? It's trade-based. That's really what it is. We're going to teach you some skills, et cetera. Doesn't diminish the education. But to understand the business and to justify your value and to get return on investment, all those other things, we have to understand this. So what are some suggestions from you guys of how do we increase this value? What do we do?
Well, here's what I'd say is that everybody's got an ideal situation they'd be in, their ideal budget, their ideal salary, their ideal clinic size. So, you know, to target just one area would be difficult. I think what would be important is a set of skills in talking to people or chain of command or reading policies at businesses to find out what you need to do. It's trial and error. Same thing that's being said is, you know, we kind of try it out. If it doesn't work, and we try something else and find what fits and find if we can get our ideal situation. And just being able to talk to people and read policies and then follow the proper chain of command.
Forrest, tell me, you know, in your outreach settings, tell me the setup, the model that you guys are using. You have athletic trainers at various high schools, right?
Yeah.
And you all are billing for services? Or you're...
Nope, we're not billing for services. We're actually,
You said it was a cost containment model.
We're looking at the cost containment model. I mean, I think traditionally right now, you know, we're in the, quote unquote, the yellow box of the, you know, the accountable care model, right? So we're transitioning from the fee-for-service model, you know, the traditional fee-for-service model now to the more of the accountable care model. So in a fee-for-service model, right, you're still looking at how do you justify the cost of the athletic trainer? And a lot of that being a non-view, that can be a write-off from the business, and we can look at it as saying, hey, this is a community service, so it's a cost neutral in regards to the books, but it's really, we're still paying for the athletic trainer. So we look at the number, the referrals and the ancillaries that are brought in from that athletic trainer into our institution, you know, our documentation for that we've, you know, built into Epic. And we know that any patient that comes into our system, whether it's for a one-time visit or if they go on to surgery, is worth about $2,200 to the system. And that's based off of the numbers in 2016 are, we have about 930, you know, patients that have come in. So we can measure that out based on, you know, what our expectation is. Patient is a fixed cost. So, you know, the four of us on this call are each worth X dollars. Now, if we're all healthy, then the system saves money. But if, you know, if I'm driving home and I get into an unfortunate accident and I'm in the, you know, intensive care unit for a few days, our four figures are not going to be able to cover the cost of one, you know, catastrophic injury. So we have to look at prevention, which is a big part of the, you know, Affordable Care Act and about accountable care organizations, is how do we prevent sickness, illness, and disease? So that side of things, when we look at our outreach programming, is we are tracking. We're tracking referrals into the system, but we're also tracking professional services provided to the athletes. And those are through the PM&R codes, the 97110s, therapeutic exercise, by the way. So we're tracking that, and then we're,
close.
You know, model, we're looking at what those rates are in Idaho for Medicare allowables. So that's about $30. And if we, for treatments, and again, based on what that code entails, that's 15 minutes of improved strength, range of motion, balance, proprioception, whatever. And if we're able to, you know, effectively use that code, we would do that, and we would bring that back to the system and show the system what we're saving, because that patient's not going outside of our system to receive care elsewhere.
And so it's that thought process, right? That whenever I hear athletic trainers that are frustrated in their settings and, you know, don't feel like they're getting the value that they're worth, don't feel like they're getting paid the salary, the hours are always too long, the pay is too low, this person's on my butt, you know, all these other things. I always go back to something that, you know, you all are talking about, which is, how have you justified your value? What outcomes are you able to show? And the issue is that the majority of people just don't know how to do that effectively. And so it's about, you know, well, what do I need to show? I think there's also a larger picture here, and it's something that, you know, we exchanged some emails. I think athletic training overall, we have a branding issue. You know, my son and I were watching a college football game. This was a couple of years ago. He's, you know, a little bit older now. Obviously, it was a couple of years ago. And, you know, he says to me, he says, you know, Dad, I always know who the athletic trainers are. And I said, oh, yeah? you know where I'm going with this.
Khakis and fanny packs, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. And we happen to be watching, you know, LSU and Alabama, and I know the athletic training staff on both sides. So I watch the games to see my friends. And I said, oh, yeah? How do you know that? He says, because they're always the ones with a towel and a water bottle. And I thought, you're right. And that's what the public sees. That's the public perception, that we're taping ankles and we're squirting water into people's mouths and we're holding a towel. That doesn't even touch the surface of what we do.
That's correct.
Right.
And we don't do, as a profession, we don't do a very good job of promoting everything that we do. That's just one aspect. And what I tell people is that, you know, like, I've got some, you know, MAT students, they get like, all I do is hold a water bottle. Well, you know, I agree with you. I'm not quite sure why you're walking around with a six pack of water bottle. I don't get it on the sideline. I don't get it. But I will tell you is that if you look at it from this aspect, I'm providing hydration, which is a preventative method of heat illness, probably the most important thing we can do. Now, there is some research from Brendan McDermott over at Arkansas that would say that we're not providing the same hydration as if they were drinking on their own. I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to leave that up to the experts. But the overall arching theme is that we have a branding issue. And so what are we going to do about that? Right? So,
Chris, at the high school level, what have you guys done? Have you done any sort of record keeping as far as the injuries, the treatments, the different types of treatments, and then applied a value to those?
We've never applied a value. And we've gotten a lot of things that we wanted by finding out what was important to other people. When I started in Pearland 12 years ago, it was just Pearland High School. There were three athletic trainers. We had a ninth grade center, so it was a different campus. We had one athletic trainer over there and two at the main high school. And then Dawson High School opened up. So they said, well, we're going to put two at each campus. And we felt like, okay, we're going backwards here. We went from three from one high school. Now we have two at each high school. So that kind of started our battle on what we want to do. And life balance, that was kind of our big thing, was life balancing. We don't want to work these hours. You know, with a big school, you know, it could be 70 hours a week. You know, you'll never spend time with your family, or you won't enjoy working. You won't enjoy going to work. So, and, go ahead, Forrest.
No, and Chris, I think that's it's a great comment. But why have we all been, you know, programmed to believe that we have to be there all the time?
We don't, but we do want to give, I think, the best quality care. It's just in your nature to help people, I think. If you're an athletic trainer, you want to help everybody, okay? So what we did was, for a couple of years, we documented our hours that we were working and what our average was in the spring and fall, and especially that springtime where you're working pretty much every night. And that helped us. The administrators understood, yes, you're right. We asked for help in the spring, and they were able to give us we proposed a different two additional athletic trainers, one at each high school. They agreed to one, which would float back and forth between each high school. We agreed to that. Also flex time. As long as somebody's there, we can the other one or two people can come in later at 10 o'clock. So that helped. But we're still overworked, so we approached them again. We show them the data that shows it helped, but it didn't help enough. And they said, okay, we're going to contract out. We don't want you working more than three nights a week. Well, that was kind of something we came up with. Three nights would be maximum for us, and they agreed to it. So we contract that out a lot, and that kind of started the ball rolling with hiring an additional athletic trainer, where now we have three at each campus. And as soon as we got the additional athletic trainer approved, then I let our AD know that, hey, here's the trend now. There's junior high athletic trainers. I would be looking for that next. And our athletic director just laughed at me and he said, you just got what you wanted. Just give me a little time.
And so Chris used the word data three times in that explanation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the athletic trainer being knowledgeable enough to use the data, right? To take that data and say, look, this is where we are. These are the outcomes we want to achieve. And these are the numbers that we're at. And I don't think a whole lot of the profession, I mean, I think we're getting better at it, but I don't think the whole lot of the profession understands how to do that. They don't look at it, you know, they don't look at it from a business standpoint.
Right.
All right, so Forrest, what data do you think we should be collecting? And then Josh, I'm gonna ask you next, and then Chris, if there's anything else.
I don't have an opinion on it.
All right, so
I'm not in it.
So, and it's a great question. It's actually the question to answer that question. I would ask another question.
Thanks, Josh.
I would ask, you know, with Chris, you know, you found out what the need was, or what what the hot button was with your athletic director, and that was hours and being overworked, right? So that was the data that you were able to bring to your athletic director to justify another athletic trainer. You know, you guys are fortunate in Texas, because Texas is very strong with, you know, with secondary school athletic training. I'm sure that argument wouldn't play well, you know, in a number of other settings. I would find it hard pressed, you know, that here we would say, hey, I just worked that many hours, so I need another, you know, another staff. So the question, you know, Jeremy, would go back to what are the needs, what are the goals of that institution, and what do they feel important? Situation, what I'm trying to look at is to bring in a second athletic trainer to our you know, larger, you know, class A, class five high schools, by saying, if I can take this full-time athletic trainer and have them focus more on rehab, then we can save more than that $65,000. So they're only doing 2 hours a day of treatments throughout the year. If I can get them doing, you know, working throughout the day, I can bring in another athletic trainer to work, you know, the sidelines, and to be there for preventative and, you know, preventative measures and acute, you know, emergent care issues. So I would sell it to our institution differently based on the volumes of finances that we're saving. But the question goes back to is what's the value determination of the institution? So what's important? So me using hours wouldn't do well.
Sure. Now, while we're doing this, it's not all, hey, you know, I'm not behind the scenes. I'm getting out of my comfort zone. I'm approaching our communications department to get the word out exactly what we do. We do a lot of things as athletic trainers. We have a lot of jobs that we do, creating policies for not only athletics, but our school and school district. You're taking care of injuries for everybody, your healthcare management for games and practices. So there's a lot of things we do. We're just not good at promoting that. So that's what I did. And so Everybody knew, our administrators knew, it's in the newspapers, here's some things. We're putting tips out there with quotes from our local physician or local athletic trainers about who we are. So it's in everybody's face. These are the jobs that they're doing. So when we did approach them with, we wanted another staff member and less hours, and then they were receptive because they understood what's going on.
So the NATA put out a document about the appropriate medical care of, you know, in this case, secondary school athletes. They did it for intercollegiate athletics. How valuable do you all think that is?
I had some issues with it. You're talking about the value model, you're talking about the guidelines for athletic training students?
No, the value model. So essentially, you know, it was at first the appropriate medical care for the intercollegiate athletics.
Okay.
And then the NATA is now working on a document. I think they recently put it out. Appropriate medical care for secondary school athletes.
Okay. So,
and so do you all find that helpful? You know, one of the projects we do in the admin class was, you know, exactly what you guys are talking about. Here are the sports for the setting. How many athletic trainers do you need? What provides appropriate medical care? How do you get away from working the 70 hours a week? How do you start to split, you know, responsibilities? So my question to you is that, did you guys find those documents helpful? In, you know, did you use them to help justify costs? Did you make your own?
We used the book I just gave Jeremy. There was an older version of it, position improvement guide it's on the NATA website. And I used a lot of that. I don't know if the document you're talking about was out yet. But I did. You have to look at the position statements or statements that are coming out from your colleagues and from the NATA as a guideline. This is what athletic trainers that are thinking about it every day, or at least whenever they're getting together and they're putting something together that's going to benefit everybody. So you have to look at it. You don't have to agree with it, but it's always good to look at those things.
Yeah, I have not looked at that. Again, we've stated before that currently I'm not a member of NATA, something we're working on. I am a licensed athletic trainer in Texas, so I'm not somebody pretending. But so those resources are limited, and again, that's my fault. But the book that Chris Shattuck gave me it seems like a very good resource just by looking through it for a few minutes. It's got a well laid out plan of here's what you need to think about, here's some of the angles you need to approach. And so I think if we were to look at those resources, it's very beneficial rather than having to create this thing all by myself, because I feel like it's kind of how I've been doing it. I listened to Chris some, and he said, you know, talk to people, tell people about what you do, add value. I talked to Scott Galloway. He said, find a way to add value, tell people what you do, but you need to be able to speak at every level, just like we've said today, to the principals, to the athletic director, to the administration. And so, again, with that book, just what I was seeing, the questions, it says do that. It says, you know, look at this level, look at these people, look at this situation. And then just like Forrest was saying, what's your goal? And because it talks about that too, identify your goal first and then find the information that needs from there. So to answer your question short, no. But
I think it took longer than 3 minutes.
I didn't give myself a time. It's part of being the owner of the show.
But I think there's also a thing that, you know, it goes back to, you know, the emails that we had and Josh talking about who we want to be. You know, do we want to be athletic trainers or quote unquote trainers, or do we want to be considered, you know, healthcare professionals? And, you know, beg to argue when I don't know if I argue, I argue plenty. So, but you know, when I, and it's not an I thing, I hate the I thing, but when I got here, there was our job descriptions were based on athletic training services, which was a pretty broad term. So we rewrote the job descriptions to discuss medical decision making, you know, management of care, and use the same terminology that our other healthcare counterparts use, right? So we don't provide coverage. We provide medical care and medical decision making at community events, you know, and I think that was a big way to help the institution understand that we are licensed healthcare professionals and that we are recognized and we're performing professional services. Back to who we are as a profession, and I think we choose what we want to be based on what our expectations are, right? Are we every physical therapist, every physician, every PA, everybody's got a right? And if we see a patient, you know, in our physician practice, we'll document the note, we'll refer them to formal rehabilitation. When they come back to us, we get a progress report, we send back a note. It's a communication factor within it. One of the things that, you know, Jeremy and I were talking about is, as athletic trainers, are we acting like healthcare professionals? Are we providing injury reports to our coaches? Are we doing the steps that other healthcare professionals would be taking? Mm-hmm. Because I think that has a lot to do with, as you talked about, Josh and Chris's is perception, right? Everybody's perception is their own reality. If our perception is hanging onto a water bottle, well, that's what we've created in our perception. But we can change that. You know, we can change other people's perception based on our reality and how we act.
So the question I have for you now is, if you look at the history of athletic training, it really came out of two arenas. One was the physical education model. One was the physical therapy model. And those two merged, and out of it came you know, athletic training. And Forrest, you said a few times about, you know, being healthcare providers. And essentially, if we want to be in the village of medicine, we have to talk medicine, act medicine, behave medicine. But our education is not rooted in the hospital-based environment, whereas all other medical providers, PT, OT, PA, physician, it's all rooted in the hospital environment. Do you think that overall...
Or the medical.
Say it again?
In the medical model, in the medical environment.
Right. Right. And so do you feel overall that that's hurt us as athletic trainers and you know, wanting to get into that village of medicine? So, if, you know, essentially what you're talking about is that to be a healthcare provider, you have to, you know, act medicine, behave medicine, look medicine. But we're not rooted in a medical environment. We're rooted in an athletic environment.
Yeah, true. But our athletes are still our patients, right?
Right.
I mean, the AMA has recognized athletic training as a healthcare professional. It's recognized our education as a medically based education model. I absolutely believe that we have to get athletic training out of physical education and the education model. And we are seeing educational programs going into the School of Medicine, you know, and then health sciences to have, you know, collaborative classes and interdisciplinary collaboration with some of the other healthcare professionals. But I think if we look at the old guard, I would say, yeah, it's hurt us because we've never approached our profession as a healthcare professional. And, you know, I can't say never, but historically we were the trainers,
right?
And we were there for support. So it's, as you talked about earlier, it's an internal dilemma. Who do we want to be? I remember a decade ago, the first time I had a meeting with the PPEC, and I don't think you were on it at that time, Josh, but about what we're doing in the physician practice setting. And the chair of the PPEC at that time told me I was no longer an athletic trainer because I wasn't taping ankles and wrapping ice bags. And, you know, I asked him, I'm like, well, how many knee evaluations did you do last week? Because I had 12 ACLs in a week. So it's still part of our domains of education, as you talked about earlier, but I think it hurt us in the past. And I think we have to make a move to position ourselves to be in the medical model in the future. That's my opinion.
I would agree with that.
And so the question I have for the three of you is that if we're following that medical model, right? If I look at our physicians that we deal with, they all went through a similar medical education, whether it's allopathic MD, osteopathic DO, it's all similar, you know, medical education. And then when you come out based on some of your interests, you go to specialize in primary care, orthopedics, internal medicine, etc. Forrest, I know that you are the director of an athletic training residency program, and I've kind of termed you the residency guru.
I'll give you a dollar later.
And so, along the lines of that medical model, do you think that athletic training needs to start to move into, you know, again, to increase value, to move into, here's the base education of an athletic trainer. It'll be at the entry level master's. And that in order to practice as an athletic trainer, you have to complete a residency. And if I want to be a high school-based athletic trainer, then I have to go through a high school-based residency program, or I have to have that exposure to these secondary school athletes. If I want to be a college-based athletic trainer, then I have to have part of my residency at a university. If I want to go into hospital, then I need to have a hospital base. What are your thoughts on that? And that's a question for the three of you.
I think it would limit.
That's kind of like our...
I mean, if you wanted to go from one setting to another, then you get to do another residency.
Yeah, wasn't that called a graduate assistantship?
Right.
But it's a more focused education, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, I mean, if we follow the physician side of medicine, that's historically what it is. I look at what we do as athletic trainers in our specialty area as a specialty area of medicine, you know, if it's orthopedics or whatnot. And, you know, our residency being that it's the, you know, the second step of specialized training within a, you know, clinical area of focus, I look at that as a little bit closer to what the fellowship model is in physicians, you know, from medicine. But if we look at physical therapy or pharmacy or some of the other allied healthcare professions, I you know, a residency is, again, it takes that specialized content area. So a physical therapist can come out and practice after they complete their DAT. I don't think athletic trainers should have to complete a residency or advanced training to be able to practice. But I do believe that if we want content experts and specialists, we do need avenue for folks to find that, you know, that content specialty and be accredited. There are educational components, there's educational requirements, there's research requirements, there's evidence-based practice. So, you know, Eric Sowers gave a great talk at the CADI meeting this year where he talked about, see, is your clinical expert. So our content area is eval and diagnosis. Although we practice in a physician setting, that's where our residency is housed. Any of our graduates should be able to come out and practice in any athletic training in eval and diagnosis. And the same with, you know, Craig's program down there at Ben Hogan, where they're coming out with a rehab concentration. So I don't necessarily know if a residency post-graduation is necessary, but I do still believe that we need them to have those content experts.
All right. So I agree with Chris. I think it kind of limits, but again, with Forrest saying that if we are to have these programs and you want to continue your education and specialization, I think that's a really good idea and really good avenue. But again, that's not truly what I'm wanting to accomplish here. So one of the things that Scott Galloway said was find ways to add value. Chris, you've talked a lot about things, some of the things that you guys do to add value. And one of the things he asked me is, have I ever done like a faculty injury clinic? So I say, hey, okay, well, let me go, you know, ask the assistant principal, hey, you know, we just want to be able to say, hey, if you're hurt, come let us check you out and we'll see if there's something we can do to help you. Maybe that's refer you to the right doctor. Maybe it's give you an exercise plan, something like that. Well, then, you know, the assistant principal's like, yeah, that's a great idea. The nurse like, yeah, that's a good idea. We have the a licensed chiropractor here working as our health science teacher. He's like, yeah, you know, I'm on board. Let's do it. So then I go to the principal and he's like, well, I got to check and see if it's legally, if you're able to do that. I'm like, oh, that sucks. So I was wanting to help, but, you know, I understand. And so it's one of those things where we're trying to educate the people here at the school what we do by saying, this is what we do. Come see us. Come let us help you out. You know, and I'm not saying I'm going to treat you all the time, every time, without any sort of, I don't know, conversation or whatever like that. It's not, you know, what we're here for, the athletes. But I want to add value to the school, add value to the district by saving teachers not having to go to the doctor, not having to do this. Have you done anything similar at Dawson?
We do take care of the teachers and administrators, whoever, anybody in the district, superintendent. We try to promote that because we want them to come into our clinic and see what the facilities are like. A lot of them have never been there or don't know what we do. And for me, it's an opportunity to educate them. But and we'll evaluate and treat their injuries, refer them out if needed. But we've been doing that since we've been open.
You know, one of the things that we did when I was in graduate school was we used athletic trainers and we started to have conversations with human resources. And the director of human resources at some point was looking to save some money and was a little bit concerned by the amount of personal injury workers' comp cases we were having in some of the maintenance plants, et cetera. And during a very brief conversation, I just said, you know, by the way, athletic trainers kind of specialize in prevention and stuff like that. So would you be willing to give a talk to, you know, the maintenance worker? I said, yeah, sure. What that did is that started to lead into some of the maintenance workers coming to this clinic that we had set up, and that the athletic trainers would look at them and just say, you know, if you need to get to a physician, I can refer you to a physician, exactly what you're talking about. We can give you some exercises, et cetera, et cetera. Ultimately, what that did is that it increased the exposure of athletic training on campus.
Right.
To the point where, in a conversation, one of the human resources executives at the university was having a conversation with our president. And our president said, you know, he had tennis elbow from shaking so many hands and ended up in our athletic training room. And so I know a lot of university presidents that use the athletic trainer, right, to get treatment, et cetera.
They're going
to
see the value in AT, right, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a matter of, I think, going back and, again, tying it all back into how do you increase value? Being out there to say, this is our education. This is what we're good at. This is what we do. Allow us to do it. Let us get in front of you. Let us talk about how we do it, when we do it, why we do it. And let us be that funnel to get you to these other healthcare providers to help you out.
Okay, Forrest, some of the ways that you guys have added value, other, like, I can only, because you're in the hospital setting, so what are some of the ways that you guys have added value, practical?
Well, I think to tie exactly what, you know, what you were just saying, Josh, it's, you know, we don't treat, you know, we manage the care of our patients, right? So in any setting that we're in, we manage that care and we triage that care. So whether that's triaging that care to see, you know, the specialist to get x-rays for that, you know, lateral ankle sprain to rule out a fracture, you know, looking at the Ottawa ankle rules, whether it's, you know, going to a more formalized rehab, whether it's managing and treating that athlete on site. So create language that says the athletic trainer is kind of the gatekeeper, you know, of the medical issues related to that. So that's the, I guess, one side of how we're promoting the practice of athletic training. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Yeah, you're saying, like you said, the same thing, getting in front of people. Josh said going to the maintenance plant to get in front of people who turned around and got the president in front of them because they got in front of people. Chris, again, saying getting in front of people, talking, working all sorts of different angles the whole time, adding value. And again, you know, taking care of the people so that if you need something, they'll take care of you or they'll speak well of you. You know, maybe your superintendent's brother-in-law works at the middle school and like, man, I wish somebody was here to take care of my kids. And then the superintendent's like, I remember Chris saying they wanted athletic trainers at the middle school. And, you know, then it come approach it from a different angle. So Chris, you look like you got something to say.
Yeah. You're making me out like, I'm always working an angle here.
You are.
And that's why I keep asking you to come back is because you always got something going.
I do. I set goals.
He doesn't ask me to keep coming back.
You're here all the time. I set goals. I think, I'm looking at my ideal situation. And then I'll put my, all my energy towards one of those goals. And I don't stop, you know. I'm not gonna demand I get these things, but I'm going to overwhelm them with data and try to get them, sway them to get on my side. And you know, in the end, come out with what I want. The squeaky wheel may get the grease. If not, I'm just going to keep squeaking.
You know, I love to watch shows like The Shark Tank, and I love to watch shows like The Prophet. And, you know, recently I've been watching The Billion Dollar Buyer. And the one thing that always strikes me about those shows is that it goes back to what, you know, Chris, you were saying and Forrest, what you were saying. It's always about the numbers, right? And the thing that strikes me about the athletic trainer in any setting, especially when you're trying to promote the profession, is you need to look at it like you're the CEO. This is your small business and you're the president and you're the CEO of that company. And you need to know everything there is to know about that company and everything there is to know about your brand. And how do we use data and how do we use outcomes to justify our value and justify our means? And how do we use all that information to keep building an infrastructure to say, look, we can do this and we can do that. And we, although we're compared to other professions, this is really where our niche is. And this is why. And I think that as a profession, if we keep looking at it from that angle and we get more educated and we keep on putting on our business hats, that will translate into more revenue. Right? More value. Now, there's some other things down the road. I feel like this microphone keeps on.
Yeah, it keeps slipping on you.
There's some other things down the road where that benefits, right? The chiropractors figured this out a long time ago. If you've ever noticed that a chiropractor, they have an entry-level doctoral degree, just like the PTs have gone to an entry-level doctoral degree. What the chiropractors figured out is that they developed a specific niche, and they're very successful from a business model in that niche. And that revenue goes directly towards their lobbyists who are able to fight for their practice settings. We as athletic trainers, we're there, right? We've started that, and we still have a long way to go because of where we're rooted from, right? So if you look at increasing the value, it's about understanding the business of what we do.
All right, I have one last thing. We're talking about adding value, things, you know, doing more. You know, Chris is saying he's going out and serving hot dogs, or Josh is saying he's out speaking with.
I'll talk to anybody about athletic training any day of the week.
Anybody. So he was out speaking with the maintenance workers.
I was talking to one of our cadavers about it the other day.
I believe it. And so one of the things I also always hear you say, Josh, is when we're in the GHATS meetings or whatever, you're like, you know, whatever I can do to help. So Chris is talking about 70-hour work weeks, and they're trying to get the hours improved, you know, a better life balance. And at the same time, we're all talking about doing more to improve that situation. How do you balance those? How do you figure those out? Like, I'm going to do more. I'm going to help. I'm going to be out there outside of what I normally do, but I'm still going to not overwhelm myself.
I'm so excited. I'm so happy that you asked this question. So many times in the past, value has been placed on quantity, not quality. What that means is that The athletic trainer that shows up at 5 o'clock in the morning and leaves at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night must be very valuable, because look at the amount of time that they're there. In today's environment, it's about efficiency. So it's not necessarily doing more. It's about how do we become more efficient at what we do? The 40-hour work week doesn't exist anymore. It exists at, you know, fast food restaurants. It exists where you punch a clock in and out. That's where it exists. The 40-hour work week doesn't exist anymore. Why? Because there's so many things. You know, you can be talking to a kindergarten teacher. 40 hours a week doesn't exist. You could be talking to a physician. 40 hours a week doesn't exist. So in the athletic training world, if we're saying, you know, geez, I'm upset that I'm working 70 hours a week. Okay, the question I always have for you is that if you're working 70 hours a week and you're making $500,000 a year, are you upset that you're making, are you upset that you're working 70 hours a week? No, it has nothing to do with the hours. It has to do with the hours to the revenue ratio. That's where the issue comes in, is that at some point somebody starts to become devalued. So it's about how do we become more efficient at what we do? And, you know, part of that is understanding the business. It's understanding how to generate, you know, more prestige in your own community. It's how to get people to buy into what you're doing. It's how to leverage your resources, right? It's about how to build that team. So I can tell you, I put in more hours now as a program director than I ever did as a practicing athletic trainer. I would probably say from the time that I get up in the morning at 5 o'clock at night to the time that I go to sleep, 10, 11 o'clock, I mean, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning, to the time I go to sleep, 10, 11 o'clock at night. So how many hours that is, whatever that is, I'm doing something that has to do with what I do as a program director, whether I'm on a site visit, whether I'm on a committee, whether I'm doing something for the curriculum, it doesn't matter. So if I add all that time up, you know, you're putting in 15, 16 hours a day, and it's a 7 day a week job. You're always doing something. And so it never has to do with the amount of hours. It has to do with the amount of money that people are making. And so the question I always put back is, how do you increase your revenue? And if you can't increase your revenue, then I would say back the hours off.
I like that. And I got something to say on that. But to answer Jeremy Jackson,
that was the second time that Chris said he liked something I said. This never happened.
To answer Jeremy's question, you know, how do you do if you want to volunteer in the profession, and then you also have your duties at school, and it's not for everybody volunteering and putting in the extra hours doing something that's related to your profession as a whole. But it takes a special kind of person that wants to make things better, that's always looking to improve, you know, your profession as a whole to do that. Some people just they're comfortable just riding those waves along and let everybody else do the work. That's fine. But it takes a special person to volunteer and do those things you're talking about. As far as increasing your salary, you know, I saw that that was one of your questions today. So I started looking, okay, well, what's our policy? There's got to be policies on what our pay grades are. We're a professional pay grade. You're on a teacher pay scale?
Yes.
So I saw some advantages of, you know, of being on the professional. We're on the professional pay scale plus a stipend. So when I go, if I'm going to negotiate, a raise, I can ask for two things, my salary or my stipend. Jeremy's on the teacher pay scale, which is, that's pretty set. Your salary, your base salary is set based on the number of years experience. And then your stipend is the only thing that you can negotiate. So I look, there's a policy in our district that says for a professional pay grade, if you're hiring somebody new, we have 3 points, a minimum, a midpoint, and a maximum. If you're hiring a new hire, they can be hired up to the midpoint pay grade. Based on certain things, you can get a percentage. So if you want to get 98 to 100% of your pay grade, then you have to have been practicing, shown that your goals meet the district's goals, which I feel like I've done. But I calculated mine. This is my 18th year as a professional. I'm below the midpoint. Mm-hmm. I'm at 97, just right over 97% of my midpoint. So I'm glad that that was a question, because I went and researched, and now my administrators, beware, I'm coming. You know, if I quit and you rehire me, I should make at least 98%, right? Because all of my evaluations have always been exceeds expectations. I've never got even a satisfactory, I mean, maybe some points that were satisfactory, but overall, always exceeds expectations. To me, I meet the district's goals. I'm in the category that says 6 years or less experience, 95 to 97% of the midpoint. So now I know. There's a policy. and I'm going to work that angle, working that angle.
The hustler. Here it comes.
I should be making more over the midpoint, and I'll be able to. I have every one of my evaluations since I started in 1999, and I can go back past Pearland if they want me to. So maybe I should quit and then get rehired, and then I'll get a higher salary.
Okay.
All right, Forrest, you have thoughts on that same topic. I know you said we want to get away from how can I help and provide coverage, but as we're talking about doing things above and beyond the minimum, what are some of the things that you might instruct your team there to do to avoid being overburdened?
Good question. It depends on the role. You know, I mean, we have, you said, we have athletic trainers in our outreach setting. We have athletic trainers in our clinical setting. We have athletic trainers in management and moving forward. But, and like you said, as a teacher salary, sometimes you're locked in, you know, at what it is. Sometimes in an institution, you're locked in. So that's, you know, and you're only allowed this certain percent of increase on an annual basis. But I do have, you know, goals and measurable goals and objectives and measurable outcomes for each person when they come into the year. Is what are you going, you know, what is your time weight? You know, I help them with their contractual agreements, just as, you know, physicians or somebody else would, where there's bonus structures built into their contractual agreements based on certain measures that they were able to or not able to attain. But I think in anything, you know, the annual, I just got off track. So the question is, what can I add? I think know what you want to get out of it. And Chris, like you said, you know, researching where you could and should be on that scale, but also having a plan set on an annual basis to say, if I meet these certain goals, I get this certain raise. Mm-hmm. You know, and you have to make those goals, you know, parallel or an equivalent to what the proprietary, you know, institution that you're working with is what their value and their goals are. So if we see, and if our volumes go up because we saw an athletic trainer, then there's the bonus structure attached to that. If we're able to increase more surgical volume because we're assisting in the OR, and then there's a bonus structure related to that as well. So if the revenue goes up to the clinic, we feel that being a part of that revenue increase, we should also be rewarded for that as well.
I like that, Forrest. And one thing I'd like to add that I've kind of lived by, on everybody gets evaluated annually, or they should. And you should evaluate yourself. How can we make things better? You can always make things better. But when you're evaluated by your employer, don't just take that. You know, if they just mark something down, they're giving you threes and fours out on a four scale, and here you go, here's your evaluation. Don't take that. I need that information. I need that feedback. What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? I need to improve. And that's your chance to, you know, talk to them. If they give you a score that you don't agree with, fight that. Tell them, these are the reasons why I don't deserve that score on my evaluation. Mm-hmm. And I always do, and they know. So they've changed our evaluation based on me. Our athletic director doesn't see what we do on a daily basis. So he got the idea. He's going to send out evaluations to all the coaches on what the athletic trainers do. Here's a set of questions. Everybody returns their forms to him. They're open-ended questions, and then he evaluates us based on those.
So Chris Shattuck was the first high school-based athletic trainer we brought on as a preceptor. And the reason why is because, you know, obviously I'm the new kid on the block. I've been here now just for a few years. I got here in 2013, and I knew that I wanted to grow the high school, our high school affiliations. And I would sit, and I'd just observe, and I'd watch. And Chris always struck me as, one, Shattuck sharp, right? Best dressed guy in the room.
No.
Yeah, it's true. Two, he always approached it from, what can I do to help? How can I make this better? And I kept on having this repeated voice in my head, not the ones that my doctors treated me for, but the one that kept on saying, this is a guy that would be a very good leader and a very good role model and a very good mentor for our students. And so what Chris strikes me as is this quote, and I forget who said it, but, you know, leaders, they know the way, they show the way, and they go the way. And what that means is, if you're in the profession and you want to increase your marketability, your value, your leverage, start to volunteer. And volunteer in these areas that you think are important. The more you volunteer, the more people you're going to come across. The more people you're going to come across, the more ideas you're going to get. The more ideas you're going to get, the more you're going to refine what's important to you. The more you're going to refine what's important to you, the more valuable you become. because now you're very focused on where it is that you want to go, and you're willing to do anything you need to do to get there, right? So, Shattuck Sharp.
Appreciate it.
All right, I am going to kind of summarize, if we're talking about justifying your value, one, you have to define it, clearly define your role, and Josh talks about knowing the six domains of athletic training.
It's five.
Five?
Five.
You want me to tell? You want me to? I'll tell you right now what they're.
All right, are you? Well, when I Googled it, on the NATA the six, look, I even got the link on the NATA.org site's default education.
The five domains of athletic training are injury and illness prevention and wellness protection.
Okay.
Clinical evaluation diagnosis, emergency care, treatment and rehabilitation, organization, health and well-being, and professional development. That fifth one in 2017 will change to healthcare administration and professional development.
Okay, so here's what I have. Again, I'm kind of getting sidetracked, but I went to the NATA website, and this is old. It says number one is prevention, two is clinical evaluation and diagnosis, three is immediate care, four is treatment and rehabilitation and reconditioning, five is organization administration, six is professional responsibility. And did I look at the wrong thing?
Yeah. So go to
BOC.
Yeah, bocatc.org. And okay. This is another thing where people need to understand the differences. The NATA is your professional. That's your professional organization. The
BOC. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome, Forrest. Thank you. The NATA is your professional organization. The BOC is your credentialing organization. The KD is your accrediting, right? So you can't practice as an athletic trainer now unless you come out of an accredited program. And then the NATA Research and Education Foundation. That's who's really pushing out a lot of the research, etc. Those four entities make up the AT Strategic Alliance. So go to bocatc.org.
Okay, so I'll go there and I'll look up. But Josh just listed them for you. So knowing the practice domains, having a goal, and using the resources that are there. So if you have a goal, clearly defined goal, that's I want to increase my salary. That's I want to add an athletic trainer. That's I want to improve my work hours, right? So pick one of those. Find out why you want to do it. Who else is doing something similar? What data may encourage the person that's above you, person that's above them, person that's above them? And then approach it from not just one different angle, but different angles, different perspectives, different point of views, so that you never know when it's the maintenance worker telling the president of the university to come visit the athletic trainer, or that it's the superintendent remembering a conversation that you had at some point. And so having a clearly defined goal, finding out, collecting data, which may be hours and treatments, and those different types of data that fit your need and help you reinforce your goal, and then proceeding from there and being persistent.
Yeah, you're going to fail. You're going to fail. People are not going to agree with you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
And just keep doing it and just try to find a different way to do it.
Well, and it goes back to the business model, I think, right? Mm-hmm. If you look at any successful business, they try something, they failed, but they're using the data, right? Let's take Nike. What shoes are selling the best? How do we know that? Because we can look at revenue streams. We can use the data. Let's invest more time in producing that apparel and doing those things. And let's not waste any more time over here, right? So, yeah, absolutely. And you're going to fail. You got to be able to put yourself out there. And if it didn't work out, great. Sometimes people get upset because they weren't successful the first time. You need to turn that paradigm of thought. No, that's awesome you weren't successful. What'd you learn?
Exactly. Because I failed several times.
Don't do that again.
Yeah. Right? No, absolutely. It took for us to get our ATs into the OR here, it took 5.5 years. I mean, but if we give up after the first time, it would have taken 6 months and we wouldn't be where we're at today.
Right.
True.
But Instagram has got to be instant. Come on now. You guys got to be with the hip Snapchat. It's right now. It's only 24
hours.
I'm
telling you, man, I can't.
Plan on years. I mean, it's going to take years to get things done.
Right. And I don't know how valid that, there's been some discussion about Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hour rule. Whether that actually exists or it doesn't. But, the idea is that it takes 10,000 hours to master something. And there is some stock to that, right? It's going to take you time. Congratulations. And the conversation that I have with my students is they're so excited. And it shouldn't take away from any excitement. You got your master's degree and you passed your boards and your license to practice. That's awesome. You came into the program. You had zero letters after your name. You're leaving. You got nine. So what? Everybody else in the country's got the same thing. Now what this did is that it bought you a ticket into the game. And now how do you get better? Where do you want to specialize? How do you want to grow? How are you gonna reach your first goal, your second goal, your third goal? Where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years? What's really interesting about athletic training is that everything that we do as clinicians, if we turn that around and apply it back to us, we're successful, right? Because it's about mitigating risk. It's about, you know, correcting deviations. It's about short-term, mid-range, and long-range goals. It's all built in, but you have to be able to look at it from that angle.
Yeah, and I think this is going to lead us to a good follow-up conversation maybe in March about negotiating salary, because we already talked about justifying your value, but Chris is going to be doing some work on negotiating salary. I've talked to Jared Plumer. He's talked to does lots of negotiations when he's doing salary. And
Jared was a graduate student at Southeastern Louisiana University.
Yeah.
And I was a young faculty member there. Jared's a good guy.
And so I think that's a good conversation. And again, it's not just about money, but it's about what is most important to you. So, yeah. All right.
Before we go.
All right.
Forrest, I got a bunch of students that they want to pursue residencies after. One kid in particular, his name is Scott Lang. And so I'd like to, at some point, have a conversation, whether it's Forrest coming down to UH or on this platform again, but about the value of, you know, these residency programs and what do these different residency programs do. So
yep.
Is that something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, on that note, tell us how somebody can get a hold of you.
Salary data.
Huh?
We have that salary data as well, if you like to know.
Yeah.
All right, Forrest, why don't you tell us how somebody, obviously Yellen knows how, but how somebody else can get a hold of you.
Yeah, I think the best way is email. It's Pekka, P-E-C-H-A-F. So Pekka, F for Forrest, at slhs.org, St. Luke's Health System. Email is probably my best way. You can go to our, you know, website, stlukesonline.org/sports, and our, you know, all my contact information is there for the athletic training residency. One last topic I want to hit on just real quick, and it's a 1 second push, but as we're talking earlier about who do we want to be healthcare professionals or quote unquote trainers, get your NPI number, folks. It's important. If you want to be valued as a healthcare professional, get your NPI.
We need those stickers, like the I voted stickers.
I won't mention names, but I will tell you that when we were asking about NPI numbers, I had a practicing athletic trainer ask me, what is an NPI number? And
ouch.
And I just...
2 years ago, I would ask the same question.
This was maybe 8 weeks ago.
That's how I found out about it. Twitter. Yeah. All right. Dr. Josh Yellen from the University of Houston Masters of Athletic Training Program, Program Director at U of H MAT Online. And you can hit him up at, what's the website, Josh?
www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT.
All right.
We are a CATE accredited athletic training program.
Very good. Very good.
100% pass rate.
We have 100% pass rate on the boards. We have 100% employment rate. And so far, all of our students have presented at professional conferences.
Good man.
How about that?
Spread the word.
How about that?
Here we go.
If I had a mic that I could hold, I'd drop it.
Please don't.
Yeah.
All right. Chris. Somebody's going to get a hold of you. How are they going to do that?
I guess email's the best way. ShattuckC at pearlandisd.org. I will give you any data that I have, or if you want to share something with me, I'd gladly accept it.
Yep. Chris is definitely very generous. He shared with us several of the things that they do with their sports medicine program. Again, their students are really sharp. They're always good in competitions. And so definitely a great resource. That's why I've had him here. Chris, I don't know if you know, but I kind of look up to you as an athletic trainer. I think you're doing a lot of good things. And so thank you for all you're doing here in our local area and then in the greater good for athletic training. So
thanks, Jeremy.
I am Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Again, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/earnyourwealth. Is that what I said? Earn your worth. Earn your worth. All right, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/earnworth. And then that has links to a lot of the different articles from Forrest or things that Josh sent or Chris sent over, ways that may help, and then a lot of different talking points we had here. So I am Jeremy Jackson, host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. And
Chris Shattuck.
That's you.
What?
That was supposed to be a surprise.
You don't like to sing Little Bunny Foo-Foo?
All right, so why don't you go ahead and... It is recording live, so...
Great.
Dr. Yellen, one of your students told me you sing Little Bunny Foo-Foo in class. There was like a point and something like that. So tell me about that.
Yeah, so Little Bunny Foo-Foo is a great example of concussions. Little Bunny Foo-Foo, I don't want to see you, hopping through the forest, bopping him on the head.
Okay.
And so if we have the bunny bopping people on the head, we surely are going to be concussed.
It's Forrest now, Pekka.
Chris, tell me the concussion protocol that you use at Dawson High School.
Well, we do our SCAT, SCAT 3 evaluation.
SCAT 3, right.
We run them through that. We
tell, for everybody listening, tell us some of the parts of the SCAT.
We've got balance. You've got your symptoms, your symptom scores, graded symptoms. You've got digits backwards.
Got something popping.
Got months in reverse order. You have to do, what else? Thinking, trying to think. Oh, your memory recall.
Short term, long term.
All right, I'm gonna go ahead and hang up.
Just short term. I mean, Skype. 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, on delayed recall. And then, yeah, immediately after two.
No, not yet. And so that's why. Kind of
and well, so this year, how many concussion protocols do you think you're on?
I mean, are you doing? You're not doing them on the same. Device,
all
right?
Our students so far, maybe 25, 30
during the season
for every sport.
Yeah, I don't think you can do Skype that's and Google Hangout at the same
how
time.
How many student athletes do you have?
About 1,000.
1,000. So you're looking at what? I mean, a pretty small amount.
Right.
What's 5% of 1,000? 200. Is that right?
No, it would be 200.
200 is 5%.
Okay.
Isn't that right? 200 times 5 is 1,000.
Okay.
And so you're looking at...
That's 20%.
Right. What?
5 times 20 is 100%.
Anyway, my point is, it's a very small percentage. Yeah, I'm on some...
I should just stay over here. And
I'm on some cold medicine today that I'll tell
you. I got
you,
dude. How's that?
Is there... Oh.
Okay.
There's Forrest Pecha.
Yep.
There we go.
How about it? I'm a technology moron.
Anyway, we're a small percentage of concussions. Okay. I feel like you and I were flying a plane right now.
Right.
This is it.
All right, Forrest, you're good?
We're all good. Thanks, pal.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.